right, the time is 2 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. A very good morning to you, all the Eagle FM listeners. Wherever you're tuning in from, thank you so much for always really just choosing us and keeping also listening to our programs, all the programs. Thank you so much for that. So welcome to the Early Morning Scoop. There is a program dedicated to you, just to providing you with latest update on the economy, entrepreneurship, and of course public policy. Your host Louisa Shumi, and of course I'll be keeping you company until the of 7:30, just to give you the usual updates. But before I do that, ready to commence with the international segment, please don't forget to rather connect with us on our social media platforms, Eagle FM Namibia, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Village Newspaper page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Do not also forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel. That is the Eagle FM, Eagle Media House. You find that on your WhatsApp channel, just for the daily news update and of course the newspaper alley. Like today, the newspaper is out. Please do not forget to either ask for the newspaper, subscribe. What you can do is just to send through your details, that your name, your number, your email. Then of course you can be getting the newspaper every day. It's really, that's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Or you can just simply subscribe to the channel, that is Eagle FM Media House. Then, of course, you can be automatically be getting the newspaper and, of course, the daily news update. And do not also forget to download Eagle FM app on your Google Play Store and, of course, your App Store. Of course, you can always be tuning in wherever you go, wherever you are. Can be in the country, within the country, or wherever you go around the world, you can able to listen or to tune in through that Eagle FM app. It's just a beautiful app. And of course, maybe if you miss out on some other programs, you can able at least to also have that time and listen to the missed shows. All right. Yeah, and to start off internationally is that the China hosted 9.2 million foreign investors in one quarter 2025, a 40.2% rise from last year, fueled by expanded visa-free policies. Now, many tourists initially skeptical left with positive views, challenging old stereotypes.
173% year-on-year this May Day holiday, with Shanghai, Beijing, and Guangzhou the top three destinations, according to Ctrip.
My first impression is this is a very modern city.
First time in China, and, because I'm in the automotive industry, so I heard that there are a lot of China cars also, especially on the EV in my country, in Asia. So I came here the city to... we went to the Shanghai Auto Show last Saturday, and it's very impressive. The city, Shanghai city also is very impressive to me.
Going to the very top of the Shanghai Tower was cool, and seeing like the whole of the Shanghai skyline, seeing the modern and the cultural and the traditional sides all blurred together was amazing. So yeah, I've picked up some really amazing pieces, especially from like independent Chinese brands, because they're special things that I wouldn't be able to get in the brand.
A recent delegation of Generation Z explorers traveled to Shanghai on a self-funded immersion program. For most, this marked their first encounter, not just with Shanghai, but also China. They said it was an experience that reshaped their perceptions.
So I knew Shanghai would be very developed, very like futuristic type, but I'm very surprised at how quiet the city is. Like all the electric cars, all the electric bikes, like the metro is very easy, it's very clean. I really want to come back, not on a transit visa, with like a proper tourist visa, and see the whole country.
And I really liked doing the night cruise at night when you could see the skyline lit up. That was really nice. I think China is a lot cleaner than I expected it to be, and it's a lot safer than I expected it to be. Shanghai feels very, very safe. I really want to come back to China and explore more.
China now has visa-free policies covering 38 countries, while expanding the transit visa-free period to 240 hours for travelers from 54 countries. The country is also upgrading service as instant tax refunds at shopping hubs are further boosting appeal.
Our tax refund data shows a 237% year-on-year surge in processed claims. We've upgraded to instant refund on purchase, so foreign visitors now receive cash immediately, incentivizing further spending in our shopping district.
Aside from government policies, service sector companies are also gearing up to make sure foreign visitors feel at home. For example, Automavi Maps launched an English version offering precise navigation and integrated cultural attraction guides. UnionPay has launched a Shanghai summer-themed card valued at 2,000 merchants, and Jiushi Group introduced the Shanghai Pass one-day ticket, combining transit, attractions, and shopping benefits into one easy purchase.
All right, to move on to the next item is that the young Chinese entrepreneurs are transforming the dining market with innovative, very driven food experiences. Now, the two giant innovators are creating trendy, affordable dining option, boosting consumption, and of course, breaking barriers.
Function in their own way. Some swap laptops for menus, some turn street stalls into food labs. How are young entrepreneurs using small businesses to create big value?
When I first graduated from university, I started working in tourism management. But since outbound tourism wasn't possible at the time, I ended up unemployed. So we went to Zhengyi, Guizhou, and discovered a very nice type of hot pot called Dean's Hot Pot. From the moment we secured a location to opening, it only took us 3 days. It was because of the skills I picked up from project management. As for the first restaurant, we recouped our investment in about 3.5 months.
In the past 2 years, consumers' demand for trying new hot pot flavors has been growing rapidly. For example, the search index for Guizhou sour soup hot pot on Douyin surged nearly 20 times year-on-year.
People are more concerned about health these days. The taste is lighter, and the oil isn't as heavy. The taste here is quite good, and our meal was under 40 yuan per person, which is a great value.
In today's restaurant industry, especially among younger consumers, what they want is value for money. We try to keep costs low and learn from our mistakes, step by step, to build experience.
Low-cost trial and error often requires a great deal of courage and patience. This mindset is fully reflected in the experience of our next entrepreneur.
When I started this restaurant, I only had 15,000 yuan. I've worked in the restaurant industry for many years. After quitting my job, I decided to do it. I spent 2 months biking around. Here, I can hear the sound of chase pieces and the clink of my gentiles. Watching such a relaxed lifestyle of the elderly here, I feel like this place has truly resonated with me. It's exactly the atmosphere I want to use to express my personal attitude. Naturally, it's attracted people.
This should be my fifth time here. Sometimes I come just to check out the new dishes. It's always refreshing and attracts me back.
The constantly changing menu reflects our attitude. We take everyday dishes and try to make them in different styles. By experimenting with different ingredients and seasonings, we create unique flavors. Stay passionate, stay creative, because only by growing yourself will you attract more people to appreciate what you do.
Research shows that nearly 70% of Gen Z consumers engage in experiential consumption at least once a quarter. Young innovators are cut.
Right, there you have it. Now, moving on to the next item is that the driven by inflation, unemployment, organized crime, and COVID-19 after effects, now illegal activity remain deeply rooted in the economy.
Transnational Alliance to Combat Illicit Trade released its latest report revealing a thriving illicit economy in South Africa, which is costing the real economy billions of dollars. It's so deeply rooted that it's not only costing out desperately needed revenues, but also killing the most vulnerable.
If less and less products are sold through the formal channels, because government can only see the formal channels and therefore tax the formal channels, it loses out on tax revenues, right? So that's one level at which illicit trade is robbing us as a nation and an economy But at the lowest level, a consumer could be consuming a defective product. We know about the spaza shop foods, that were sold through spaza shops that led to some fatalities.
A strategic review of South Africa's fight against illicit trade paints a grim picture due to illegal activities spanning various sectors, including tobacco, alcohol, pharmaceuticals, as well as wildlife trafficking.
We are dealing sometimes with the syndicates that have tentacles throughout, the world. So what we do from the National Consumer Commission is we do work with other regulators. So we collaborate with regulators in the US, Europe, other regulators within SADC. And throughout the African continent, because as a single regulator, you may not be able to, tackle this, successfully alone.
Efforts to combat these crimes are showing some progress, albeit rather slow.
There has been some progress in the sense that our report overlaps a lot with the Financial Action Task Force findings in 2023, and now we see that the country is on the verge of getting out of the grey listing. What we are proposing now is having a summit, or a regional summit, in South Africa. The idea is to continue in the work that we already started doing, which is creating a seamless platform between custom authorities, law enforcement, brands, and service providers. Criminals, they have done this for many years. We need to catch up.
Addressing illicit trade is not only about protecting the economy, but also about safeguarding the citizens of South Africa. It will take time, this is no easy fix, but the collaboration between Trafid, Business Unity South Africa and the government is a move in the right direction.
Alright, there you have it. The time is 13 minutes in the of 6 o'clock and this is early morning. Skip now to move on to the next item is that Australia, United States and Chinese officials will meet in Geneva, Switzerland over the weekend for talks that could usher the start of a broader trade negotiation between the two economic giants. Now, the talks comes after weeks of tension between the Washingtons and Beijing that has seen T40 tariffs between the two nations reach well beyond 100%, measures that have lulled global markets and escalated concerns of a global downturn. We might take a listen.
U.S. goods at 145% and China's tariff on U.S. imports at 125%. The current posture has been unsustainable for the two global heavyweights, leading to broad uncertainty and what the U.S. Treasury Secretary equated with a trade embargo.
As you may have read in the press, I will be going to Switzerland and the negotiations will begin on Saturday. The trade negotiations will be led by myself and Ambassador Jameson Greer and USTR.
Their next
China to graduate from developing country status. It is the second largest economy in the world. They are a large important economy. And they should no longer be granted the status of a developing economy.
China has indicated that it will enter the trade talks firmly opposed to the U.S. tariff hikes, after both sides struck a strident public posture, waiting for the other side to blink first. It was the USA that requested the trade talks.
It is the U.S. that has launched a tariff war against China, and China's attitude has been consistent and clear. If the U.S. wants to fight, then we will defend ourselves to the end. If the U.S. wants to talk, then we will leave our doors open. Recently, the U.S. side has repeatedly expressed their willingness to negotiate with China. Trade and tariff wars have no winners. If the U.S. side truly wishes to solve issues through dialogue and negotiation, it must stop threatening and extorting and talk to China on the basis of equality, respect, and mutual benefits.
China has warned that the U.S. tariff policy would severely impact the global economy.
Since the beginning of April, the U.S. government's tariff policy has severely impacted international economic and trade order, and the international financial market has been in turmoil, which has also brought great pressure to the domestic capital market. As a next step, the China Securities Regulatory Commission will continue to promote the function of the capital market, and while strengthening supervision, it will also strive to convey the temperature of supervision and try its best to help affected companies cope with the impact of the U.S. tariffs.
The US countered that China asked for the talks as public perception on both sides drives the narrative, with Washington seeking to rebalance trade with the interests of the American worker and domestic manufacturing.
PRC is going to have to, frankly, let their own population consume a little bit more. They've held consumption levels down in order to increase these massive exports. It means that American manufacturers are going to have to be treated more fairly in some of these global trade deals. It means we're going to have to cut some new trade deals with some of our friends in Europe, but also with some of our more adversarial nations. But that also, you know, we have to be careful here, because while we want to rebalance global trade, and that has certainly been the explicit goal of our policy, we also want to make sure that we do this in the right way.
I'll take a look at it.
Yeah. President Trump was asked about pulling back the tariffs on China to provide the talks in Geneva with some momentum.
He says in order to have substantive negotiations, you have to bring down the 145% tariffs. Are you open to pulling back your tariffs in order to get China to the negotiating table?
No.
The U.S. Federal Reserve keeping rates steady this week amid continued uncertainty.
The tariff increases announced so far have been significantly larger than anticipated. All of these policies are still evolving, however, and their effects on the economy remain highly uncertain. As economic conditions evolve, we'll continue to determine the appropriate stance of monetary policy based on the incoming data, the outlook, and the balance of risks. If the large increases in tariffs that have been announced are sustained, they're likely to generate a rise in inflation, a slowdown in economic growth, and an increase in unemployment.
Right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item is in Zambia, is that a group of investors and the Unlocking Potential Forum is set to invest an initial $20 million to create an agriculture hub in the northern region of Zambia. Now, the project will include a youth training center, a hatchery, and a feed mill to boost poultry farming and, of course, support young people in the rural areas.
Gas is the northern part of Zambia. Foreign investors under the Unlocking Potential Forum plan to create an agricultural hub, starting with an investment of $20 million.
Our vision is to realize the potential, the amazing potential that the Zambia country and people have, and that we've done that through putting anchor value chains into communities, which can create an economic engine, create exports, add value, and create a framework which we can unlock people.
This follows an earlier investment of $15 million in the southern province over the past 5 years.
We have seen church farming cooperatives, bishops beginning to run chicken houses and working together in groups.
We no longer just want to preach the word and expect the offerings. We want also to be seen to be in the forefront.
And Small and Medium Enterprises Minister Elias Muranga officiated at the investment forum.
And I'm happy as Minister for SMEs that our focus is not only in urban areas, we're focusing for those who are SMEs in the villages. What you have been doing in Southern province, this concept, speaking to our small scale farmers, within the communities, they are able to systematically follow what has been taught.
Meanwhile, Arts Permanent Secretary Chama Fumba has encouraged young people to take advantage of the investment opportunities.
That as young people of this country, as a youth of this country, we want to be part of what is happening in transforming the economic
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the workers at Daybreak Food are calling for for jobs to be prioritized as stakeholders deliberately over how to save the farming operations. Now, in its capacity as a stakeholder, the Public Investment Corporation has vowed to continue supporting the company amid the current crisis.
I mean, chicken farming is hard. We had Astro, just a company, they had a trading update, last week, and we can see that the industry is struggling. They've got high input costs, which is mostly maize, which is feed. You've got income costs, which are also escalating. High water costs. In some cases, you find that your ESCOM and your water is not reliable. That adds extra cost to it. And then you've got challenges around avian flu. At some points, we get dumping out of South America and Europe. So it is a very, very tough
situation.
And in the listed space, we've got operators who've been doing it for decades. And truthfully, they're not always profitable. At times, they are losing money. And I think maybe this is what has befallen Daybreak. There might be issues of mismanagement. I don't have insight to that. But certainly an industry which is very volatile and at this point is struggling across both listed and by all accounts the unlisted as well.
With how you've described the industry as well as the situation faced by Daybreak, can this company be saved? Because we've seen the PIC as a shareholder promising to support that particular business, and is business rescue even an option at this late stage?
So it absolutely can be said. I mean, it is one of the beauties of the industry. It's very quickly moving from getting the live chicks to sort of taking them out. I mean, that is about a 35 or 40 day period. So they can recapitalize and really get back on their feet, truthfully, and they can be up and running again and generating revenue by the middle of next month. It is that sort of speed to it. But it needs a couple of things. It needs some capital. That is hugely important. It needs commitment from management in terms not just of the staff, the 3,000 jobs and the risk at Delmas, but in terms of supplier arrangements. Are suppliers to Daybreak, are they confident enough to supply? Do they want money up front? So there's a lot of moving parts, but as well, it needs to move fast. And I think it's why business rescue was certainly an option, but business rescue is typically a slow and cumbersome process. And something as fast moving as chicken farming, you don't really have that time. So I think a sort of a recapitalization from the PLC and helping in that regard is probably the better and more likely to save the business.
And that's exactly what I wanted us to touch on as well, Simon, about the cash injection that would come from the likes of the PIC. How fruitful or sustainable could that be, looking at maybe a long-term review of whether this company can stay its course?
I think, and it comes back to, you need good management in place. The logistics is challenging, but the process is challenging, as I mentioned right up front. But the PIC also, I think, needs to realize that this is an investment in a business. It absolutely is. Make no mistake about that. And at times, the chicken industry is very profitable, and we see great profits and great dividends coming out of the industry. But they've also got to realize, and I'm sure that they do, they're experienced investors, that there are drawdown times, that there are times things aren't going your way, profits disappear, you might even go into losses. But it's often the case, though, to some extent, that we're talking here about the chicken business. There's also just the broader community, the 3,000 people who work there who haven't had salaries, that they are obviously supporting households and many, many other people. So I do think it's viable for PIC. They obviously need to have the right management team in place, and then they need to understand the cyclicality of this industry.
As a parting shot, jobs may be on the line. Can they be saved alongside the efforts that are being put in to ensure that Daybreak does not fall on its feet?
Well, they can be saved, absolutely. I mean, a quick cash injection. I wouldn't know the numbers. I'm not close enough to the business to know the exact numbers. But in the PIC scope of things, a relatively modest and quick cash injection can get it back on its feet literally within days, within a week, and then the jobs are safe. But the longer-term process is, of course, is getting the sustainability and the shareholder and the management all on board so that the jobs are safe, not just for sort of May, June, but for years to come.
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the Chief Justice Office involvement in Crafting Mango's complaint probed.
Judicial Conduct Tribunal into Judge President Sobhi Mbonenge probed the involvement of the Office of the Chief Justice in crafting Andisa Mango's complaint. Later in the day, the focus turned to how the complainant spread sexual pictures sent to her by Mbonenge to some high court secretaries in the Eastern Cape. Znigom Saba filed this report.
The Office of the Chief Justice took center stage
at the Judicial Conduct Tribunal looking into sexual allegations against Eastern Cape Judge President Selby Mbenenge. The inquiry is hearing claims that Mbenenge sexually harassed High Court Secretary Andiswa Mengo. On Thursday, a former advisor at the Office of the Chief Justice took the stand to testify about Mengo's complaint.
And you heard Ms. Mengo saying that you had told her, that you had called her to tell her that she needed to redo this complaint. Yes. And then soon after that, you happened to discover a copy of the complaint on your personal folder. Is that right?
Yes, because initially I was searching for it in the JSU folder that I had created.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So as and when I was going through my personal folder, which was in my laptop, I then discovered a complaint where it was named Andiswa Mengo. When I opened it, I saw that it was the initial complaint, but it was not commissioned.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And when was that?
When was
that that you went through that process of finding this?
I think it was on the 13th of January, because I immediately sent it to Ms. Sonia to give it to present it to the tribunal.
Okay. So to run through that morning of the 13th of January, you watched the evidence, you heard Ms. Mengo talking about you phoning her to tell her to do a new complaint.
Yes.
You looked at your laptop.
No, when I looked at my top, I was not looking for it specifically.
Mm-hmm.
I just came to it when I was looking for something else. That's when I discovered that this is where the initial, this is where I saved it.
Mm.
Yes.
However, Mengo's legal team questioned the credibility of the testimony.
When you look at the transcript of the 13th of January, by 12:53, by 1 o'clock, which is a lunch break, Ms. Mengo had not even mentioned the complaint. She hadn't mentioned the misplaced complaint at all. In fact, that whole morning of the evidence had been taken up by procedural discussions, by opening statements, and then by Ms. Mengo starting evidence talking about her dispute with the court manager.
Okay.
So I want to put it to you that you could not have had your memory jogged about the misplaced complaint by hearing Ms. Mengo testify about the complaint before 12:53 on the 13th of January. Is it possible that you're mistaken in your memory about that?
It's possible that I'm mistaken. Maybe I did find the original first, and then when she later testified about the misplaced part, then it jogged my memory that it initially was misplaced. It's possible.
You see,
all right, there you have it. The time is 29 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop, and that marks our last update of the from the international segment. So we'll move to the local, but before that, we'll go into a very short commercial break, and then after that, we can take you through, or I can take you through the local news update. Do not go away.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy handbooks to the world of digital handbook versions. See the bold new expressions of the IMBA app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital handbook in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved IMBA that brings together various handbooks under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymnbooks on IMBA app are the Elsie Nyanga.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Same. Don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Alright, the time is 31 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Mornings Cube. Thank you so much for joining us, and if you just joined us, a very, very good morning to you. And to start off in rather locally, is that the Ochikoto Mine is projected to produce between 165,000 and 185,000 ounces of gold in 2025, according to the B20 Gold's first quarter of 2025 report. Now, the mine, 90% owned by B2 Gold, is expected to process 3.4 million tons of gold at an average grade of 1.63 grams per ton, and with a gold recovery rate of 98%. Now, in the first quarter of 2025 alone, Ochikoto produced 52,578 ounces of gold, exceeding expectations. Now, during this period, the mill feed grade was 1.96 grams per ton, and then throughput reached 0.84 million tons, and gold recovery average 98.8%. Now, for the remainder of the year, gold will be sourced from the Ochikoto open pit, now the Wolfshag underground mine, and supplemented by existing stockpiles. Now, open pit operation are set to conclude in the third quarter of 2025, while underground mining of Wolfshag is expected to continue through 2027. Now, in addition to current operation, the B2 Gold is assessing the economic potential of the Antelope deposit, which could also extend the life of the Ochikoto mine. Now, exploration results suggest the possibility of extending underground production of Wolfshag Bank beyond 2027 and supplementing process operations until 2032, when economically viable stockpiles are forecasted to be depleted. Now, according to the preliminary economic assessment, the Antelope deposit could support a small-scale, lower-cost underground gold mine, producing approximately 65,000 ounces annually over a five-year mine life. Now, with the total producing estimated at 327,000 ounces. Now, combined with the lower grade stockpiles processing, this could raise a total annual production at Ochikoto to around 110,000 and out from 2029 to 2032. Now, to support the development, the B2 Gold has approved an initial budget of $10 million for 2025, aimed at advancing early stage planning, securing project permits, and initiating a long lead procurement. Now, the company also plans to complete key technical work, including a geotechnical, hydrological, and meteorological testing in the coming months, and will also conduct a competitive bid process for the Antelope development phase. My final investigation decision and at Antelope is expected in the third quarter of 2025. Now, the PEA is based on the effort mineral resources of 1.75 million tons, grading 6.91 grams per ton gold, totaling 390,000 ounces, and the majority of which is concentrated in the Springbok zone. the B2 gold development could come also as the central bank considers gold accumulating for its national reserves. Now, however, the Bank of Namibia has not yet indicated where it will source the gold. Currently, Namibia has no gold refinery, and all of its gold is exported to the South Africa. Now, moving on to the next item is that we engage with Emily Abraham, manager of Horticulture at the Namibian Economic Board, who discusses the importance of career guidance to the learners and, of course, the youth.
Yes, maybe just in a nutshell, to provide career guidance is very crucial among the youth and also learners who are perhaps at school doing their grade 11 or grade 12, so that at the end of the day when they finish their matric, they understand what exactly they need to pursue. And this is very crucial, Louis, because sometimes you find that a lot of people, they go and do the same career. You find that some of the careers are flooded, creating also the market influx at the end of the day, such that you find that people are invited for an interview and it's 300 for one position. Meanwhile, other careers, people, they are crying, they are looking for specialists in specific areas, but they are nowhere to be found. So that is what happened. That was on Saturday, and the youth, they organized themselves under the umbrella of International Youth Fellowship, but there were around approximately, I think, 300 or more than 300 youth. They were invited and they attended, and I can tell you it was amazing, because a lot of youth, a lot of young people, they were not aware that agriculture, one can basically create jobs for other. Agriculture is actually a backbone of this country, and somebody can pursue specific career for agriculture and yet you still be regarded as you are employed. Okay, so that is basically what happened, and I can tell you that this program alone, on its own, when you initiated it, I think it's also another game changer already for Namibia, especially for you, and if they are listening, for them to be able to understand that it's not about white collar job always. It's not about only, I'm not criticizing other careers to say they're not of importance or something, but all what I'm saying is that we grew up knowing only three specific careers, if I have to tell the truth. And those are now to be a nurse, you grow up and then you'll be told, yeah, please study hard so that you can become a nurse, or study hard so that you can become a teacher, or you can become a police officer, and so forth and so forth. We have specific areas that we have value for since we grew up, and I don't blame anybody because I think it has to do with exposure as well. So you tend to admire something that you see more often. And we grew up seeing teachers. We are impressed. We see how they are. And we would love to be teachers as well. So, but then when it comes to agriculture, I think there was no platform where someone, or even up to today, some young learners, they might feel, I love plants. I love animals. But clearly they do not really, they can't figure out what exactly they should pursue as a career, because it can be that they may be taught, supposed to be future veterinarian, or they're supposed to be future entomologist, or they're supposed to be maybe future plant pathologist or whatsoever. So I think also it's an exposure, and I agree with you that there is limited exposure for youth in Namibia, and also that is something that may be from the media perspective, from the agricultural perspective now, as role players or agricultural agents, we need to look at it and prioritize such that we create a platform where the youth, they can come and learn and also get exposed to see that there's so much that one can actually do in agriculture. If nothing can allow me, I can list a few agricultural careers that one can show you. We have things like agriculture economist.
Okay.
We want economists in agriculture to guide us to say how far are we as far as the agriculture economy is concerned, where are we lagging behind, where do we need to improve as a country and so forth. From the number perspective, we know, for example, farm accounting, we are lagging behind in terms of you go to a farm and the farmer cannot tell you, for example, how much am I producing. how much am I likely to get from my plot, my plot of 5 hectares or something. So if we can have some people that can guide the sector as to what does it mean when you are aware of financials that are concerning your business, your family business. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And how do I know that I'm making money without just running a business like a subsistence farm where I'm just taking from my pocket, I'm forking out money from my pocket without knowing that this is coming from, I'm making money or I'm not making profit. And other things, for example, IT. People who love to do IT, you can actually do agri software developer. You can become a developer. You've done your IT, but then you can actually employed in agriculture sector, or you can take space in agriculture sector where you can develop software where farmers basically they can use your software to take records, to perhaps to monitor their field to see how is the growth rate, or maybe which field germinated very well, and so forth. And also, we have apps that can help farmers to do scouting, for example. So those are the things that we need to look at. We have, for example, animal scientists, we have agronomists, we need soil scientists, we need food scientists, we need veterinarians, we need agricultural engineers. You can do engineer that specifically for agriculture. So that is just one take to say, agriculture is a sector that can accommodate all.
Okay.
Whether you are skilled, unskilled, educated, uneducated, you can still be accommodated in agriculture. And that's why for any country to advance development, especially when it comes to social development, where you do want to create jobs, I can tell you agriculture, it should be number one priority sector that we should really advance more development if we are to create jobs for the youth, to create jobs for everybody that is struggling to get jobs.
Yes, Emily. Yeah, I understand you mentioned most of the professional or career in terms of the in agriculture sector, right? So now maybe also one of my, or maybe most of the audience also would love to ask also that, okay, if I now happen to rather involve myself into such sector, am I going to get a job? Like how is the market within the agriculture sector?
Yes, like any other sector, for example, you find that you know, I'm not sure which sector I should give an example, but you will find a sector will be comprised of specific jobs or careers, but then you find that people they will be more concentrated in one career than they will leave the other. And that's what creates, for example, market flooding, where people, they maybe just did sustainable agriculture and all of them, because it's easy, I don't like to deal with numbers. And one thing that I was even telling you, and I want to say it today again, is don't go or don't pursue something that is easy. Because the easiness of that thing, it will create problem at the end of the day. Always pursue something that might look tougher now, but then in the end, the job will look for you. So you find that, I remember, I can give my example of myself when I was doing an agribusiness course. I think we were a few in class, we were almost 10, and then we were told to say, who's going for agribusiness, who's going for sustainable? And I can tell you, I think the only three of us that chose to go for agribusiness, and the rest, they were saying, no, we don't want anything to do with econometrics, because econometrics, we are going to fail, it's number subject. But I can tell you, we need the gap in the industry, we need to understand numbers. It starts with numbers for you to do business. Without understanding any numbers, I can tell you, we are wasting time, because we'll end up investing more money without even return on investment. Okay, that is something that I want to highlight to say, it's about selecting or picking a career that is unique, that is, you see that a lot of people, they are not doing it, such that you are able to get a job as quick as possible immediately you finish your school. And for example, just to give an example, as an entomologist, I'm not sure whether we have some people there. And you will find that we have the best outbreak in the country, for example, Tuta absoluta, or white flies, and you'll be now looking, can we have at least a specialist who can advise on this? It's very hard to locate these people. But if we can have some youth passion career in entomologist, for example, or maybe plant pathology, those unique careers where we have gap, we don't have skill, we have to import skill. I think those are the gaps that we need to fill. if we are to realize and start appreciating that agriculture really is not to say we struggle to get a job.
You are in this agriculture sector, right? And of course now we want to understand also that the youth, we see that they're not really interested in this sector. Maybe this mean that there was no maybe proper guidance in terms of career, or what could be also be the reason, and what do you think could also change the people's mindset or the youth?
Yes, one thing that I can tell you is that our mindset being molded from home or from where we are, the community where we are coming from. But for as long as the mindset of the community where we are growing in or where we are being raised is, we regard agriculture, for example, as hard labor or low status, or maybe it's a dirty thing to pursue, or it's an old fashion. And some people will find that they are saying, unless if you make agriculture sexy, then that's when youth will come. If you have an understanding to say agriculture is a low-paid job or is a dirty job, I can tell you that nobody would want to pursue something that will become dirty. Do you understand this? Mm-hmm. Or maybe something that will be told that will be paid low. That is not true. It's not true that agriculture will be paid low, because if you look at even, I like to give an example of a scene, I think is I think at the seminar mentioned something to say, the next generation of millionaires and billionaires will be farmers in Africa. Look at that. You'll see that money is actually in agriculture. It's a matter of understanding what to do, how to do it, and what type of crop you should pursue, or any enterprise. It doesn't need to be a crop. It can be poultry, for example, maybe eggs, or maybe it's broilers, or maybe it's piggery or something. You need to understand the process of how do I do it, and seek guidance from people, whether it's farmers that are doing it better in your area, whether it's from the agricultural offices that are in your area, whether it's from NAB, for example, in terms of crop, so that when you come in with the right product that is required in the market. Then you see that you start to appreciate agriculture. But the moment you start just waking up, you go on Google, you Google something, you see, I learned that how that squash can sell very well, you can make money, then you start growing it, and then you are stuck to sell. Later on, you'll be able to say agriculture, you get stuck, agriculture is a waste of time, or you will experience more huge losses. I think it's anything in life, it depends how you do it. But if you do it right, you end right. Yes, so that is, I think, something that I also picked up. And also awareness, I think, and also lack of education, I think, is just something that is really lacking. And I think it's something, it's an area that we need to improve. We need to do more programs, maybe radio programs. We need to do education, maybe in schools, maybe in career guide also, where when those grade 12 are being also invited, I think ministers of education need to start also inviting agricultural specialists so that they can come in and also start to ignite the passion of agriculture among young students, because these are the future farmers. And I can tell you that the statistics is so bad. As we speak now, 60% or above. That is now the age of a farmer in Africa, Namibia included.
Okay.
Now, the question is that, where is the future for Namibia? If the future of farmers are you, the learners are the future of agriculture. If we are not starting to prepare them now, then obviously Namibia will rely on import in future, because there's nobody who is willing to produce, nobody who is willing to participate in doing agricultural job. I like to give this example. Allow me to give the time. There was one young youth lady that was supported by a certain project. I don't want to mention names or either a specific name of the project. And she received some funding. It was even in the form of a grant funding. And she was given almost everything, infrastructure, water tank, everything. And we even did first planting. And it was cabbage. The reason why we picked that cabbage is because we looked at youth and we realized that youth, they like something that is quicker, that can generate money quickly. And that's why you can't actually come up with a project for youth and you are saying it for fruit or maybe it's for cattle, because they cannot wait for long.
Okay.
So we look at it to say cabbage takes only 3 months, let us at least invest in cabbage. And eventually, once now she start harvesting and sell, then she can now start buying her own inputs and stand on her own. So what happened is that, and you can imagine that it costs maximum $5 to produce a head of cabbage. And in a hectare, you have 30,000 heads of cabbage. And you see that, for example, the local going price for cabbage, it can be $12, $13 to $15. If you make your own calculation, you see that that's a lot of money. And that was now 5 hectares. While the cabbage were maybe two months, they are about to be harvested. Just in the next month, we learned that the lady went to look for a job, a household job in Windhoek. So what I'm trying to say is that, look, it's about quick money, but then if you compare to a minimum wage of 2,000, maybe 200 that one will get to is helping people now to care for their house. And when you are doing your 5 hectares of cabbage, which is supposed to give you a lot of millions, I don't want now to do some calculation because of time, but you can see that it's a lot of money that she's supposed to do to make. She's supposed to create jobs for others in terms of whether it's seasonal people, I mean workers, that they're supposed to come and assist with packaging, whether also it's permanent people that are supposed to assist her eventually. But she actually let this to go in the drain because of lack of awareness, because of lack of understanding, and also because of the mindset and the misconception that agriculture is a dirty job. And I want to tell you today that dirty money is clean money. It's better that you get your hand dirty and get clean money. Today you find that a lot of you, they are doing, how do you call this? They are doing some games, they call it something that...
With the bet.
Sorry?
With betting?
Yeah, to do betting.
Yeah.
You find that they are doing a lot of betting, and I can tell you betting in agriculture. I always like to tell people to say the clean betting, the quicker betting is in agriculture, because it's about putting the seed in the soil, care for the seed, care for the plant, and you sell and you get your money. So that is basically, for me, I would love to say, let us take the route of farming. And we find that we'll be able to make more money. Is it for us to concentrate in doing betting? So I really feel that I think you they need to redirect their interest to farming, because it's only through farming that we'll be able to provide food for our families, for our communities, be able to create jobs for others, and also be able to enhance food security at national level. I think we have the same understanding. I think we'll be able, Namibia will continue to be green, even in the next generation. Yeah, it's just to say that youth approach offices, approach banks, so I think you can basically explore those opportunities and be able to get money and be able to invest in agriculture. Because sometimes you might be sitting down and saying, no, but I don't have resources. I want to farm, but what should I farm with? But please, come out of your comfort zone, approach different offices. You can even go to your uncle that you think that, I think my uncle, I just need the land. I just see that there is a piece of land that is idling there. Go to your father, go to your mom, get that portion of land that has been idling for so long and put it into production. You can start small, start simple, but you need to start now. That is the message that I have for you. Then I can tell you again that please, some of the things are not of interest, such as going to the cooker shop. It's something that you can do, but it's really wasting your time and it's not adding value to your life. We want you to be famous by having a product branded on the shelf, not for you to be known as somebody who buy a lot of alcohol or who do what. But I'm not also saying that you must not support local businesses that are selling alcohol. All what I'm saying is that let us do things that will add value to our lives and let us create a brand in agriculture. And I think this is the way to go if you want to see Namibia as a hub for Africa, because that's what we are actually dreaming to see. It's a small population that has produced enough for ourselves and also sell to others. And then we'll see that our youth also, they will have jobs. Because when we are importing too much, then we are also exporting our jobs. I think that is what I want to say from my side today.
All right. Thank you so much, May Emily, for having you.
Thank you very much, Lloyd, and please continue also growing some crops there on the radio, because I also said that the Italian is also farming. So people who are young, and I think keep encouraging others to be engaged in agriculture, and because we eat every day. You might need a doctor maybe twice a year or something, but you eat every day, and the lucky ones, they eat 3 to 4 times a day.
Thank you so much, my Emily.
It's all right.
All right. The time is 56 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. So there you heard from Emily Abraham from the Namibian Agronomic Board. She just really just spoke about the importance of career guidance, whereby she recently attended a career guidance weather workshop. Yeah, then they said she said that maybe previously people did not really get better guidance on the different types of career in the country. That's why there are only a few professions that are really getting more people, and of course getting also not to get ending up also jobless because of more people into those kind of profession. But they we can move on to the next item, whereas the Namibian University of Science and Technology has conferred degrees to more than 2,800 students over the past 2 days, significantly contributing to the country's pool of skilled labor. Now, this represents a 40% of increase in the graduate output, reflecting growth in the institution's capacity to produce academically equipped, economically capable individual compared to a decade ago. Now, graduates join a bigger pool of young people from over institutions of higher learning and vocational training center who entered the job market this year. Now, for context, the University of Namibia, UNAM, splashed out nearly 4,000 graduates from its 12 campuses in the country. And now, while many are expected to enter the job market in search of employment, others are expected to pursue entrepreneurship. Combined, UNAM and NASTA have also added over 6,600 graduates to the national workforce so far this year. Now, these numbers are, however, expected to increase with other universities such as the International University of Management, IUM, and Wavejia University now set to host their graduation ceremonies later this year. Now, last year, IUM produced 3,054 graduates across its winter and summer ceremonies. Now, growing number of young graduates entering the labor market could further strengthen in countries already troubled job sector, now with the nationally unemployment rate currently at 36.9%, up from 33.4% in 2018. Now, according to the Namibia Statistics Agency, NSA, this unemployment rate is based on the 2023 Labor Force Survey, now which also uses a narrow definition that includes only those actively seeking and available for work within a specific reference period. Now, however, when applying the broader 2018 unemployment definition, which also accounts for discouraged workers who are not actively seeking an employment but are available for work, the unemployment rate raises to 54.8%. Now, youth unemployment remains high with 44.4% of young people employed. Now, these figures shows that despite a relatively small population, a personal population, the country is a persistent mismatch between the simply of skills graduate and availability of jobs opportunity despite a sense of notable economic.
Hello, Namibia. The NSA is conducting the Household Income and Expenditure Main Survey from the 28th of April 2025 to the 22nd of April 2026. Our officials in NSA uniforms, IDs, and branded vehicles will visit selected households in all 14 regions. Hashtag Your Data Matters.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lodrides at 91.2.
Yeah, to continue, youth unemployment remains high with 44.4% of young people unemployed. Now, those figures show that despite a relatively small population, the country faces a persistent mismatch between the supply of skilled graduates and availability of job opportunities. Now, despite stints of notable economic growth as indicated by quarterly gross domestic product report. Now, the data from the former Ministry of Labour and Employment Creation shows that a large proportion of those who secure employment are individually without formal academic qualifications. Now, analysts have long pointed to a mismatch between the skill produced by educational institutions and the need of the labour markets. Now, in an attempt to find solution or to the unemployment question in the country, some institutions have began revisiting their curriculums and introducing new programs aligned with the country's economic development goals, particularly in the higher demand sectors such as energy. Now, there is a growing nation calls for the countries to revise and strengthen its vocational courses to meet technical demands across various sectors. Now, to move on to the next item, the link between what we learn and what we do in our industry, Namibia continues to gain food bags from external countries. Now, despite the declaration of war on poverty by the previous and current administration, Namibia still cannot produce enough food. Now, my colleague David Shombe got into the conversation with Dr. Kai Kachetunya, a rector of agricultural science and Vavicha at the University of Vavicha, just to unpack this for us.
Yes, we are continuing with early morning scoop. We are looking at food security. We are also looking at economic development. However, today, this morning, we are going to look at where is the gap. We are going to look at the gap between academic agriculture and also practical application of agriculture knowledge, particularly when it's coming to food security. It was indicated that despite the previous and the current administration declaring war on poverty and also food insecurity, Namibia is still getting food parcel or food bags from other countries. However, for us to unpack this, we got into the conversation with an academic, Mr. Dr. Kai Kachatenya, who is a lecturer at the Vavicha University School of Agriculture and Natural Conservation, just to engage us this morning and to help us unpack where is the gap. Dr. Kai, good morning and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Yeah, morning. Thank you very much to welcome you on board so that we can see where we can fill the gap between the agriculture and the industry itself.
Yes, maybe let us look at the content of agriculture, particularly when it's coming to academic agriculture. We are trying to understand what is the content of agriculture modules at university or the institution that you are teaching, and also its relevance to food production in Namibia.
Yes, thank you very much. When you look at the models or when you look at the content that we are actually teaching in various institutions in Namibia, with them, our focal point is more on soil science. So you know that Namibia is an arid country.
Yes.
We also focused on crop production, different type of crops that we normally produce in Namibia. And then we also look at livestock production itself, which is more on breeding and all the other. And then we also look, this one is a new one. We will look into agriculture economics and agribusiness itself.
Yeah.
And then we also recently introduced agriculture engineering. We have horticulture production. And then we go to extension and rural development in environmental as well as the natural conservation, the natural resources and management.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at various institutions like the University of Namibia, you might have somebody that is doing a bachelor in agriculture.
Yeah.
Where he's more specialized in soil science, maybe human science, or then we look at our center here, which is more on vocational, which is more on hand-on. We will also teach our students how to produce their own food, how to handle farm animals, and also how to also to do this small-scale farming, just in short.
Yes, maybe apart from the content of the module, what is the relationship between the agriculture which is taught in class and also what graduates are going to do? Because I'm asking this question because we have seen a lot of agriculture graduates who are still struggling even to manage their own farms or even to find something to do, even creating their own employment and also to work in the field of agriculture. What is the relationship between that and where is the gap?
Yeah, actually, when you look at the content itself, the content in terms of theory and practicals, what we have is that our theoretical content is more, it's depth.
Okay.
But the gap is that in Namibia we have more, our students like the practical when it comes to the industrial areas,
yeah.
Because our students, they look at job opportunities, they don't have something to start up with in terms of capital. And then there's also a good relationship between our curriculum or when they go into the industry, because the industries are doing is not actually sometimes what they are being taught at the institutions. So we also need to match between the two, the industries as well as our institutions, so that we can close the gap.
Let us look at apart from now theories. As an academic and also a lecturer of agriculture science, what other challenges did you find in implementing what is being taught in class and also what is on the ground? What other challenges did you find?
Yeah, as I've said, that most of the institutions that we have been in India, the first maybe challenges that we might have is that we might have limited infrastructures and resources.
Okay.
You are thinking about the school pounds, maybe... the greenhouses, the irrigation system, the livestock facilities, because we might have some institutions that are teaching agriculture that are in towns or they are in cities,
yeah.
Where students they might like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, the other one, maybe it might be the inadequate other funding, because we might somebody might be in a graduate, but at the end of the day, to start up something also in terms of our disciplines, you might not get maybe you want basics. Or you want to buy fertilizers, or you want to buy livestock so that you might like that funding as well.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is a shortage of our staffs. Sometimes, to be honest, in India we don't have people that are well trained when it comes to agriculture. You might have somebody that is a farm manager, but he might only have a certificate, or you might have an instructor that is there, but he's only having a diploma or a technician. We don't have somebody that is a well equipped graduates or somebody to teach the learners.
Mm-hmm.
So the other one might be the access to land.
Okay.
The one I spoke about is access to land is one of the challenges, because for you to have an agriculture project for students, you need adequate land. So if you don't have enough access to land, sometimes the practical for students might be challenges.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Dr. Kaya, let us look at the current administration and also its prioritization to food security. We have seen a good pronunciation from the current president, who also indicated, the utilization of green scheme and all those things. From an academic perspective, what do you think need to be done to make sure that academia, government, private sector and NGOs are working together to make sure that Namibia become food sustainable or able to produce their own food for a long period of time?
Yes. As I've said, just to mention a few maybe so that we can be together, is that we need to strengthen the relationship between in terms of agribusiness and our institutions,
yeah.
Because they need to work hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're developing maybe our curriculum, sometimes we need to involve those people that are on the ground,
yeah.
So that we can involve them also in terms of our development of the curriculum, so that they can understand what we need and what is expected from our students.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the second one, just to mention a few, is that we also have to make agriculture practice central. Let me say, it should not be an option. There's some institution is that we normally teach theory, but when it comes to practicals, it tends to be an option. It should not be an option. It should be centralized.
Mm-hmm.
So that all the students can have the project in terms of agriculture. Maybe to mention another one is the link between the institution and the farmers as well. That is very, very important, that if we train our students here, they need to be equipped with somebody that can guide them in terms of local farming or cooperatives.
Yes, Dr. Kai, let us look at the last question, because we always ask, you know, academics and also experts, particularly in the fields which has to do with food production and also advancing our country. As an academic, what is your proud moment, and what is one tangible thing that you say you have contributed to the field of agriculture?
Yes, the implementation of agriculture started a long time ago.
Yeah.
But the implementation of agriculture in vocational centers, okay, or in vocational training center, I was part and parcel of them to develop the curriculum that will focus more on practical.
Yeah.
So that we produce people not only academic in terms of theoretically, but practically. So, what I'm proud of that, throughout the past 5 years, 10 years, I've produced farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And also in terms of this one, I was also part and parcel of developing most of the curriculum in agriculture so that they can fit in with a new environmental, with the new technologies that are coming, because nowadays we understand that we have drones that can be used for agriculture that we have never used before.
Mm-hmm.
We have other things that are coming into places. So we have also implemented new curriculums that are coming into places so that they can change our life in terms of our climate changes and so forth.
Yes, finally, Dr. Kai, what is your message to those who are waiting to venture in agriculture, particularly the young people, but they don't know where to start, or some they are still scared of losing their capital, and some they still do not have a clear picture on investing in agriculture and also farming in particular?
Yes, my final conclusion in terms of the generation that are coming is that They must come on board, because we have implemented projects that are fitting the generations for that are coming into the future, which means this is not more on education itself, but it's more on becoming somebody in future as well. Mm-hmm. And also nowadays we have changed the classroom. We have changed our classroom into farms.
Mm-hmm.
So which means our classroom they are more into farms. And also in future now our graduates that are coming, They are not going to be just graduates, but they are going to be producers, mm-hmm, and entrepreneurs, mm-hmm, in future.
Yes, thank you very much, Dr. Kai, for joining us this morning, and thank you for your input.
Thank you very much. I highly appreciate it.
All right.
All right, on this, a farmer, Festus Nunyango, also joined us to unpack why we are not producing enough ourselves. We might take a lesson.
Good morning, Mr. Nunyango. How are you doing?
Yes, good morning, Rafia. Good morning, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So the link between what we learn and what we do in our industry, Namibia continues to gain food bags from external countries, despite, mm-hmm, the declaration of war on poverty by the previous or current administration. Namibia still cannot produce enough for herself. Today,
yes,
we sit with those with knowledge to educate us to a sustainable country in terms of food production. Please tell,
mm-hmm,
us, what is the relationship between agriculture, education, and practical education?
Yeah, well, agricultural education is meant that you have equipped people with skill on how to understanding about the agriculture. Then practical education, to my understanding, is such that it is how do you practice that in reality, practicality, meaning practicality. How do you plant? How do you able to get the product from the agricultural activity what you are involved in? Whether you are involved in livestock farming, or whether you are involved in planting, maize meal or maize or any horticulture activities.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And how can we build a relationship between agriculture, education, and farming?
Okay, no, we can actually, first of all, you have to make people to love agriculture itself. So that's so that the education can also just be a catalyst or aid to what people like, so that they can practice that agriculture skills. Mm-hmm. This is the, is to make that the agricultural activity as a business, because everybody want to make to earn a living. So earning a living is such that you should able to plant and mm-hmm. able to sell your product. So by that, people will do will love will like to go study the agriculture, and after all, you are expecting them to do the to do practical what you have done voluntarily without nobody even pushing them, because they see that the result is that they are going to earn a living.
Mm-hmm. And as a farmer, what can be done to improve food security?
Well, there are so several things a lot can be done, but this is different from a farming activity as it is. Okay, let's start first with the livestock farming. If livestock farming, like this year, we came from the drought, where there was so many droughts, which was in 2008, 2009, and there's also this the last drought which we came on, 2004 and all stuff. It really devastated the people who have been farming livestock, and also some of them who are also farming with rain-fed, like rain-fed fields, and they also suffered. Okay, but focusing first on the livestock, a lot of people sold their cattle to minimize the stock. And they remember that if you don't have a stock, the number of cattle head, mm-hmm. it is very difficult, a few number of them, it is very difficult to sustain yourself in livestock farming. So when you don't have, you need to go buy, or you need to wait for some certain years so that you can build so that they give birth to the new ones.
Mm.
Understand? But in order to capture that as fast as possible, you need to go and get a loan. Where can you get a loan? You have to get a loan from Agribank or any agricultural banking activities, but such loan must be with low interest. Mm. Shouldn't be with a higher interest as we are at the moment.
Mm.
Where I was expecting like the institution like Agribank to have loan interest on those who want to restock on 4% or 5% interest, but it's not like that at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So then comes back again those who are planting the maize meal, maize and horticulture and those stuff. Okay, when they plant, they didn't know how that the rain will not come. Then at the end of the day, they spent their money to plow the field, they spend the money to buy the seed, and the human capital is also involved to rent to pay those people who are helping you. Then at the end of the day, the rain did not come. Everything, the business was doomed. It was a blow to them. But if we had a center pivot or something, or money where you can able to do dripping system, you can able to pump water and do that, you can able to sustain. But that things need also money. You need money to buy all those equipment, and then after you buy those equipment, you can use the result, and this is the result which are getting the product. You should have a market for them. If you produce them, there must be a market. They must be absorbed by the market. Either by the informal market or by the formal market. Informal market is like when you sell them to the open market outside. Formal market is when you are selling them to Pick and Pay and ShopRite. That is the formal market. And also you have a contract with a certain hospital, schools, prisons, okay, those people to absorb and to eat the local produce product. So that is what also is needed for that to improve the food security. Okay, what I can add for you is that a country which cannot feed itself,
yes,
or a house which cannot feed itself,
yes,
is the poorest house. You must be able to feed yourself. So we are very few in the country. What we need to do is just that we have to put our priorities right,
mm-hmm.
and then we can able to do that. We don't need to import like product like wheat, maize meal, onions, tomatoes, and all the stuff from other country. We have sufficient land, just that our priorities, our Ministry of Agriculture, and our banking sector, and also our market like school institution, those institution like agronomic board and AgriBusDev and those, they must just organize the market as such that we should able to sell among, things must be sold locally. We must not import things before we did not consume what we have produced. Otherwise we produce for waste and it discourages the people to continue engaging in farming activity.
Very much, and have a wonderful day.
Likewise.
All right, there you have it. The time is 22 minutes in the hour, 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on is that my colleague David Shombe also engaged with the former ambassador to the UN, to the Amini Kalomo, just to discuss how South Africa decided to close down its embassy in Sofia, Bulgaria, due to a diplomacy realignment and saving of costs. We might take a listen to this.
Yes, it was indicated that South Africa diplomatic mission in Bulgaria will be closed from the 30th of June. That was in line with realignment of South African diplomatic missions and also to save, economic resources. However, we got into the conversation with Namibian former diplomat to the U.S. and a retired diplomat who serve in different capacity, serve in United Nations and also in foreign different foreign missions. We got into the conversation with Ambassador Tuliameni Kalomo just to engage us on this matter and also what Namibia can learn. Ambassador, good morning and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Yeah, good morning.
Yes, Tate Kalomo, let us look at South Africa's decision to close down its embassy in Bulgaria, and we also need to look at what Namibia can learn, especially when it's coming to realignment of its international relations. Maybe let us start to say, what are some of the things which force or allow the country to stop or close down its mission with another country?
Well, I don't know. I am not hearing you well. But if the essence of the question is about the closure of South African embassy in Bulgaria, my answer is that in the history of diplomacy, countries assess the utility or usefulness or productivity of their embassies all around the world.
Okay.
When you assess that a particular embassy is not as productive as you would wish, you often take a decision either to reduce the staff or to close the embassy altogether.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is what led to the South African decision to close the embassy. I don't know the reasons. But often, countries close embassies either for political reasons or for economic reasons.
Now, let us look at maybe let us look at Namibia and also what lesson Namibia can learn from this. We are asking this question because Namibia is a country with, various or a lot of diplomatic missions, a lot of embassies with different countries, but young people are still asking, our problems are still not solved. Do we also have a situation where some of our missions are not productive, and what can we learn from this?
It's very difficult for the public to assess
yeah.
whether or not the embassy is productive.
Okay.
Most of the work of the embassies
yeah.
are intangible.
Uh-huh.
You don't see the results.
Okay.
You go to an event or function.
Yeah.
You meet an individual or a group of individuals.
Yeah.
And you tell them about your country.
Yeah.
In the end, they go to your country as tourists.
Mm-hmm.
That's the work of the embassy.
Yeah.
But the main function of the embassy is to maintain understanding and international peace among nations.
Mm-hmm.
That is the underlying significance of having a diplomatic mission in different countries of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, whether they are direct, tangible results or they are not direct, tangible results, the issue of maintaining international peace and understanding remains crucial.
Uh-huh.
And this is what most Namibian missions do. Maintain understanding, fly the Namibian flag, tell the world about how beautiful Namibia is,
yeah.
how majestic its environment is,
yeah.
and therefore attract them to come and either invest
yeah.
or visit Namibia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now, as a diplomat with many years' experience in foreign missions and also with the Minister of Foreign Affairs that time and international relations today, have we experienced a situation where Namibia also have to close down some embassies due to reasons like what's happened with South Africa, or we are still maintaining what we have been maintaining for after 35 years?
No, since independence, we have not closed an embassy because, first of all, our embassies are very few.
Okay.
I think all told, we have either 31 or 36.
Okay.
They are very few. And South Africa is more than 100.
Mm-hmm.
In some countries, they have an embassy, they have a consulate, like in the United States,
yeah.
they have an embassy in New York,
yeah.
a consulate in New York, a consulate yeah. in Los Angeles, an embassy in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Where we only have an embassy, and they also have a consulate in Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
We only have embassies in Washington and New York. We are a very small country, and we have very, very few embassies.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, no country is an island on its own.
Yeah.
We have to have relationship with other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Promote economic relations,
yeah.
sell what Namibia produces,
yeah.
And buy what we don't produce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and send students. We send students all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Yes, maybe the last question, Abasanda, there is evaluation of diplomatic evaluation, which is happening in South Africa. Do we also experience this thing? Because I'm asking this question because we don't really have a lot of diplomats who come out and we speak with them. And when we get you, we also get the time to ask you this question. Do you also have re-evaluation of our diplomatic mission and also assessment of our diplomatic mission and realignment also, like what's happening in South Africa?
You know, within the Ministry of International Relations,
yeah.
they have a structure that provides for evaluation of embassies.
Okay.
They send out senior individuals
yeah.
to various embassies
yeah.
to assess the performance,
yeah.
the staff well-being,
yeah.
the well-being of the locally recruited staff,
yeah.
the productivity of the mission, the areas of focus.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, they put a report together
yeah.
and they assess the viability
mm.
of a particular embassy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that until now,
yeah,
our embassies are all found to be viable.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we have very few embassies.
Yeah.
Congo Brazzaville, Congo Kinshasa, Accra, Nigeria, Senegal, Algeria, very few.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, they are expensive.
Yeah. Yes. The last question is. It's a philosophy of our foreign policy. We used to hear about it, to say we are a friend to everyone and the enemy to none. And don't you think it's the right time now for Namibia to make bold decisions, particularly with countries that are not aligning with our interest?
that was an expression of sentiment policy.
Okay.
Namibia, Morocco is not a friend of Namibia.
Yeah.
And Namibia is not a friend of Israel. So we cannot be a friend to all and an enemy to none. We have enemies.
Okay.
Otherwise, why do we have a defense force?
Okay.
To defend ourselves against any enemy,
mm-hmm.
or rather against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so no, let's say like a sentiment and expression of feeling, it's not a policy.
Oh, okay. Yes, thank you very much, Abbas.
All right, there you have it. And of course, the time is 31 minutes in the of 7 o'clock. And of course, that was the last update of the day from the early morning scoop. Thank you so much for joining us. And moving on to the next item, of course, I'll be handing over to Tate Walenga to take you through the unpacking of the day. And Mayor Victoria just here waiting for the very, very great discussion that they will be having. Thank you so much. And just a little short up advert, and after that, they would dive into the discussion of today.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the R.
Your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymnbooks to the world of digital hymnbook versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymnbook in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymnbooks under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsi Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholics Manekakarunga, the Africans Sengfuar Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your...